This podcast was recorded on the lands of the Boon Wurrung people of the Kulin Nation, the land on which we're lucky enough to raise our sons and daughters. Always was and always will be Aboriginal land.
This episode of Ready or Not is brought to you by Home, Melbourne's first of its kind postpartum hotel where mothers are mothered. Before listening, please note that today's episode discusses suicidal ideation, self-harm and postnatal depression. Before you press play, please consider if this conversation feels right for you. When I emailed Emma Malloy to find out a little more about her journey, she reflected on some of her darkest days. And at the bottom of the email, there was a list of 10 things she's learned along the way. So instead of trying to describe who Emma is, instead, I'm going to read my favourite bits from her list. She writes, "But it's not all bad. Here's a list of the lessons I've learned. Pancake batter can be cooked as a cake if you can't be bothered to make the pancakes. The washing is still done, even if it's sitting clean in the basket. I am a person, not a robot. Children aren't robots either. Sometimes you have to give up the idea of being perfect in order to find perfect moments. An example would be my son's last cricket game last year. My husband was away and my son was upset because he didn't get a chance to bat. Normally I would try get home for dinner, but we stayed back and I bowled until the sun went down. The smile on that kid's face is burned into my memory forever. And finally, you are allowed to miss your old life." This is such a powerful conversation. It's the story of how one mother emerged from her darkest and loneliest moments to find the light. Here we talk what it's like to be a defence spouse, how she overcame some of her lowest moments, and how she makes work work today. I'm Lucinda, this is Ready or Not, and here is an absolute gift of a story, one of the most vulnerable episodes to date, with the open and honest Emma Malloy. Emma, a lot of people that follow Ready or Not on Instagram and that listen to this show will be delighted to know that you're the person that wrote that list that I posted on Instagram. And for those that don't know what I'm talking about, I will link it in the show notes. But it was a pretty profound email that you sent me. It was unlike any introductory email I've received from a guest on Ready or Not. And in it, you were very vulnerable and talked about getting to the point in isolation where you were really struggling. There were thoughts of ending your life, which is no small thing to share. So thank you for being so open. I want to know how you reflect on that now that you're 13 years into your journey, how you remember it and how it sits for you.
In some ways, I regret my introduction to motherhood. I had a baby, finished a degree and moved into state in 4 to 6 weeks, thereabouts. I think I did the three biggest things that you do in your life in a very short amount of time. And I don't think you do that and be okay. So We moved and I ended up being a place where I never lived before. I didn't know where the supermarket was, like all the, you know, normal things where you know where they are. I didn't know any of that. And I had to find that, but also try and navigate that with a newborn who didn't sleep. I broke him on the way, I think. I still to this day think that we broke him, but I did hit an incredibly low point. I did actually plan out my own suicide, and then just feeling that, I still feel that despair and that utter feeling of looking at this newborn baby who, all intensive purposes, was healthy, but just didn't sleep. And then feeling like I should be happy, but I'm so alone and empty. And just every day, I just filled with dread over just the next day. And just having to find, I had to leave the house, but then having to find the strength to leave the house, to get everything entered the house. Like, it's not, you know, before children, it's like, let's leave the house, and you just leave the house. It's just, have I got everything? Have I? And then, you know, feeling just lost and alone, but then having to, you know, one side of your brain's thinking, I just want everything to stop. I want the pain to stop. I want to feel like I belong somewhere. And then the other side of you is like, what do I have to do today? What, you know, I have to have a clean house because that's what's expected of me. I have to make sure that the baby's fed because that's, you know, I do love this little life that I've created, but the little life that I've created is kind of making life very hard, right? And is very, looking back, I regret that I felt the pressure to feel certain things, but then at the same time, I wish that I'd kind of spoke about them earlier.
Yeah.
I remember screaming for help inside, just utterly screaming, going, I need help, I need help. But no one was listening.
You also hold a lot of empathy for that person. I know you mentioned regret, but do you also want to give that person a hug?
Yeah, I do. If I could go back, I'd really like to say to her, it's the start of your family.
Yeah.
And this is one small moment in a collection of moments that are going to make up a lifetime. And, you know, you can close the door on this and move on to something bigger and better.
How early did those really deep feelings of despair set in your postnatal journey?
About 3 to 4 months in, my husband went overseas and I was just alone and just not having anyone around to ask for any sort of support and just having to do all the normal everyday stuff without, you know, you can't ask someone to put the garbage bins out. Yeah, the garbage bins need to go out. The washing needs to be done. Everything needs to be done and you need to do it. And just the monotony of all of that and then feeling this incredible pressure building up of, this is all me and I have to do this because if I don't, I'll live in my own filth and I can't do that to my son either. So
how did you pull yourself out of that level of despair where you actually had even planned out ending your own life? What got you out of that?
I was one night in our many nights of not sleeping. I guess I had this moment where he had a rocking chair in his room and it had the little ottoman. And I thought about if I just put my foot in that ottoman and open the window, I could potentially fall out and then with the baby and then it's all done. And then if the baby dies, like it was an accident. And then if I die, yay, we move on. But when I was opening the window to go and I went, hang on, this is not me. This is not what I'm meant to be experiencing at this time in my life, I need to stop. And at that point, I closed the window, walked away and just put my son down and just had a big look at myself. And I looked in the mirror and I just didn't recognize myself. I weighed 45 kilos. I had lost, but I didn't even look like me. And I went, well, this is not me. So I'd grown up with a mother who was mentally unstable. She had depression my whole life. She probably wasn't fit to be a mother to be. She was really good with my brother because she was better when she had my brother. There's 8 years between us, but by the time I came along, I kind of tipped her over the edge, I think. So I kind of just stood back and I'm like, I'm not her either. I don't want to go down that same road. What can I do now?
And what did you do?
Well, the next day I woke up and I came with a plan for myself. I just went, what's one thing that I can do every day that puts joy back in my day? And sometimes that was having a hot cup of coffee. You know, generally don't really have a lot of control over my life, especially with a young child on your own. There's zero control. That it might have been, I'll draw something or I'll go outside. And instead of like having a to-do list, I will go out and just sit. Yeah. That's my to-do list. And it was just little snippets like that. I started to concentrate on eating properly because sometimes you don't. Like you just get so wound up in what you're doing. You just go through this cycle. So I had to stop that cycle and I had to concentrate a little bit more on me to just breathe back. I did when my husband came home, I started to have conversations about how I wasn't okay. Like I'd had them before, but I don't think they'd hit home until he came home and saw me. Like I didn't weigh the same as when he left either. Like 45 kilos is not a healthy weight.
No.
It's really bad. And then when he came home, because my son still wasn't sleeping, we kind of tag teamed per night so that I could get at least one night of sleep for a while and just kind of recover a little bit.
And did you seek any professional help at that point, or were those the little things that just got you out of that really significant despair?
I didn't seek professional help. It's something that I probably need to do given how I grew up. I'm not ready to have those conversations because it would bring up a lot of trauma and a lot of pain, and I'm not ready to face that yet. So it was just about doing little things that acknowledge the fact that I'm still a human being, that I'm still allowed to miss how life was, and we will get. Like every day, just do something for you and eventually you'll know what you look like again.
Yeah. And so you mentioned your mum, and I won't take you there to the point where I want you to tell those stories, because as you've mentioned, they're not things that you're ready to reflect on. But I do wonder, when your son came into the world, were you faced with some realities of those glimmers of trauma? Like did it?
Yeah.
You hear a lot, of course, that we learn a lot about our parents when we become parents, and we all of a sudden are aware of the ways in which we do want to be like them and don't, and all of those things. Was that part of your postnatal depression or anxiety, do you think?
Yes. Like an example of what my mum was like is that I was in hospital and I had my son 3 days in, the hormones go down and everything's in chaos. And my mum rang me that day and just went, "Emma, you're going to cry today." And I'm like, "Really?" And she's like, "Yep, yep, you're going to cry today." And she was staying in our house at the time. And she said, "I need to get out of your house because the bedrooms are above the kitchen. And if there's a fire, I'm going to die."
Wow.
So that's what life was like with her a little bit. It was like, "I've just had a baby. You've just said I'm going to cry. I'm pretty sure you're the reason why I'm going to cry today. Thank you."
Yeah. Wow. It can be a lot to unpack. So I can't even imagine when there's trauma involved. If I take you back to pregnancy now, I think at the time you were finishing your university degree. Can you tell us about that time in your life?
There was a running joke that I'd have my son at uni. And then there's another running joke that our combined brain power would get me through. It was really a different time. I didn't go to prenatal classes because the prenatal classes were at the same time as one of my classes. So I just didn't go. That didn't turn out to be a horrible thing. I felt ripped off in the pregnancy a little bit because I didn't get to have the joy that goes along with it, because it was just, it was a bit of a shock. And it's like, I've still got all these things to do and I had to finish because we were moving. So I had to finish then and there. There was no, you could have, you know, take some time off, or there was none of that. I had to get.
Yeah, it was like, you're getting out of here.
Yeah. So I even got to, because it was, you know, back in the day where you couldn't really submit anything online. So I actually planned that the hospital where I had my son was actually across the bridge from where I hand in my uni assignment. So if I was in labor, I could go in, hand my assignment in, and keep walking.
Talking about crossing the threshold.
Yeah, that was how I planned my pregnancy.
Yeah. When you say that it was a shock, do you mean that your pregnancy came by surprise?
Our son wasn't unexpected. I was young, like being last year of uni, we were really young to be parents.
How young, can I ask?
Well, not that young. I was 26. So yeah. We were married and quite settled, and I went to uni a little bit later. So I guess like we're not that young, but it's still very young compared to the norm. When we moved state, I definitely noticed that I was very young. You had an episode a few months ago that talked about being a younger parent.
She finished her university while pregnant too, I believe, if I remember correctly.
Well,
there you go. And so you're pregnant, you're studying, you're getting ready to become a mum, and your husband works in defence, which I'm sure you, of course, are aware of what that's going to mean for your life. But what did that mean before your son actually arrived? How in your head did you see that working? And did you expect it to be as challenging as it would end up being?
I guess a lot of it we didn't actually think about. Well, our son was planned. He just decided to turn up, which that's a gift. He came in exactly the right time, but I know that now. I didn't know that then. I guess we always knew we would have a family, and I always knew that being, you know, in defence, you do have a slightly different life to everyone else. Like, there's not a lot of stability. The stability comes in your relationship, not in the place you live. So it's just a little bit different. I never really thought about what it would look like. I just knew that would be challenging, but I also knew that I wanted a family, and what the family was out of the challenge.
And so you do give birth to your son. At what point does your husband actually go away, and when does he return in that postpartum journey?
So he had to fight with his boss to actually stay at home the day that Oliver was born. So we didn't start that well. He was due to go somewhere that day, and he rang his boss and said, "Emma's just given birth. I haven't slept all night. Can I take a day's leave?" And I could hear it on the phone. It was about 20 minutes worth of, I can't come in. I'm not fit for work today. Like, I'm a risk if I go into there. I've just had a baby. I need that day. And this is a different time. This is 13 years ago. We've moved on a lot since then. Like, I've watched families be more accepted now, but there's still that, you know, the defense didn't ask you to have a family the attitude that you get a lot.
Wow. So it's like, this was your call, mate, you get back to work type thing.
Pretty much. And then, he did go back to work a couple of days later and then applied for parental leave, which was at that point was only 2 weeks. And that was kind of it. And then, we hadn't moved yet. So I didn't worry about it then because we were quite set up. I had friends. Like, it didn't really matter that he wasn't around. He didn't actually go away until we'd moved to the next location. So I was really quite lucky. We were quite stable at that point. He was just doing his normal, 9-to-5 type job. There it's 7-till-3 or whatever the hours were at that time. So we didn't really experience too much separation until we got to the next location. And then things got quite real quite quickly when I had that social network in the next location that I had before.
So then we've obviously touched on then you getting to some of your darkest moments when you did move to this next location. And we've heard a bit about how you helped to build yourself back up. How do you community build when you're new somewhere with a new baby? How did that side of things come to be, and how did you find the support network that you needed?
I found it incredibly hard out of the ones that I knew through my husband's unit that he was working in. We were the youngest with kids with a baby, so there wasn't too much support from anyone that I would kind of be okay with talking to. We did move into a location where my husband's parents were living at that time, but they didn't really come and visit either. We were living too far from them.
Was that really hard for you to have maybe expected that support and then it didn't ever show up?
Yeah, and I think that was part of the reason why I got so dark so quickly is that I kind of expected that everything would be okay.
Yeah, well, you probably thought I have family there, like they're going to hold me.
Yeah, but they did. So I just kind of had to find a way. When we moved, I did join a mother's group, but that was difficult as well because I, like, part of the, I guess you could call it a consequence of being defence is that you kind of don't fit in anywhere, but you fit in everywhere. So you kind of never feel like you belong external to your own relationship, I guess. So it's really hard to talk to people when you don't really know anything around you. So you can't go, oh, where did you go to school? Or because you don't know any of that. And also being a lot younger, I kind of waltzed in. And they didn't even think I'd be married when I walked in. And they kind of treated me like, you're just this teenage mother who,
oh, you know, wow,
is married and we don't really want to associate with you. And then it's, you know, you have those first conversations and you're like, oh, well, we've been married for 3 years. And then it starts to change a little bit, but the age thing is still a bit there because they don't take you seriously because they don't feel like you have the life experience that they do. And that,
wow,
you get written off a little bit. That was my experience anyway. But I just felt like I was a bit written off because I was quite a bit younger than the norm.
Yeah, and I feel like that sense of belonging becomes even more important when you have kids because you really need people to turn to. And even you mentioning things like that you didn't know where the local supermarket was, I can understand why that feels so big, because when you've got babies, you need to be able to immediately like get the Panadol or the Nurofen, or like you need these safety networks around you because they become really important in a way that they weren't pre-kids, don't they?
Yeah. Well, even just being able to know where you can park so you can get the pregnant out of the car under pressure.
All those little things that seem like whatever, like as if that matters. But once you have kids, you're like, that does matter because it's stressful, all of that stuff, especially as a new time mom.
Oh, I have broken a pram trying to get it in the car. I've forgotten how to fold it because there's behind you, right? And there's all this stuff happening. You can't sing.
Oh, it's stressful. My chest tightens just thinking about all those early experiences. So you eventually do return to work. And I think this is almost in pursuit of helping your mental health a bit. You sort of think, okay, things need to change. Maybe going back to paid work will help that.
Yeah.
But it's pretty challenging, I think it's fair to say, that time. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, because I just graduated, I was at a completely different point than everyone else. So I had networked before we moved and found a position that was 2 days a week, but it was still a graduate role. And of course, I'm a graduate, but 2 days a week isn't what normal graduates do. And then combine that with sleep deprivation and not knowing where you are and all those sorts of things, it was definitely a bit of a challenge. Like, you saw other graduates just kind of pick everything up and learn really quickly. And I didn't feel like I could learn anything because my brain was full of fog, really. Yes. I was fairly
thick fog.
Yeah. Oh, I can't say I was useless, but I felt really useless just because I just did not feel like I could string everything together. And then learning a new job, learning a new city. And what I do varies between states. I'd moved to a different state to what I trained in. So I had to start all over again in the middle of a fog.
Yeah. And then you eventually get fired. Your words, not mine, just for anyone listening that thinks I'm brutal for saying it. Can you tell us a bit about that? And I'm so interested to know if this would happen today, because a lot has happened, I'd say, in the last 13 or 12 years, and it seems so brutal, but I think, unfortunately, it would have been really common for mums then.
There was a lot of, because I was conscious of doing, you know, pick up and all those things, I had to leave at a certain time. I had to make sure that I got my work done quicker than anyone else around me, because I had to make sure that they saw that I did all my work that I had to do that day before I left. And yeah, I did get to a point where I did get fired, and the words were, we weren't what we thought you were when we hired you. And then, yeah, I just in my head, because you don't say these things out loud, I'm like, but I almost killed myself 3 months before. I'm probably not the person that thought you hired. And honestly, if you're going to fire me over trying to learn in a difficult environment and not supporting me through that learning, then this is probably not a good place for me.
Imagine a place where postpartum professionals who are mostly mothers themselves and who feel more like your aunties and cousins than staff cook wholesome food for you and your baby, wash, fold and put away your clothes, run magnesium-filled baths, massage your tired body, bring you cups of tea and nourishing treats to your plush bed. Take your baby overnight and have deep conversations with you about the beauty and pain of motherhood. While you sit your tired body down in the dining room, as smells of breakfast, tea, and coffee fill the air. Morning light streams in and dances over a bowl of lemons, a big vase of flowers, and soft tunes fill the space. No, this isn't some dreamt up land that we can only access in our sleep. This exists at home, the first of its kind postpartum hotel where mothers are mothered. After giving birth to her first child, Home founder Larissa Leone found herself lost in the very early stages of becoming a mother, an experience that is incredibly common. She had wonderful support but felt very alone and didn't want to let on that she wasn't coping. After finding herself in some very dark places, she decided to speak up because she knew she needed help. She was later diagnosed with postnatal depression and anxiety, and now Home's mission is to assist in the prevention of just that, of exactly what Larissa experienced, by providing holistic care, nourishment and support, all while nurturing and honouring one of the most profound shifts a human being can go through, the matrescence period. Home is a place of soft spaces for hard things to land, a safe space that empowers you to forge your own path and provides the encouragement, education and support needed for you and your family to thrive. To learn more about Home and the Home Trust, a registered charity that exists to provide financially supported stays to families in need, and to book your own stay at the place where mothers are mothered, visit home.com.au. That's Home spelled H-O-M-B.
So how did you move through that? Because it sounds like you knew that, okay, this isn't right for me. But I'm sure also there's so many feelings with sort of our identities and our self-worth and our egos that are attached to what we do. And then on top of that, you'd had these really, really dark times just previously. So how was your headspace when you did leave that job?
When I walked out of that office, it was a really warm day and it was probably the warmest day that we'd had. And walking out of those doors, and this was in a city, so you're in the middle of the city, you come down the lift, you walk out the doors and the heat hits you and you take off your cardigan or whatever, and I just felt like a veil had been lifted.
So it was a weight off instead of making you feel worse.
Yeah, I did feel like maybe this profession isn't for me for a little while, and I did kind of feel like maybe, like, I guess in a way it's reverse imposter syndrome because, you know, you've been fired. So it's like you don't really have this imposter syndrome, but you feel like you've got to trace back a little bit and you're like, oh, hang on, maybe I didn't know all those things that I thought I knew. And maybe is this really for me? Do I have, maybe I'll just be a stay-at-home mum because that'll be easier. I used to kind of get really scared of talking to people on the phone because I'd be scared that I wouldn't be able to answer their question. And I used to think to myself, I'm responsible for a human life and I feel more comfortable with a human life than I do answering a phone. That's stupid. Why do I feel like
that? Yeah. And so eventually you become pregnant with your daughter. Had you gone into other paid work before that period, or did you have a pause after you were fired from that role?
I had a really big pause. I didn't go back to paid work for a long time because we only had 1 year left of that posting. And I felt like I'll spend 6 months trying to find another job and then I'll only be there for 6 months. Like that's not investment in me and that's not an investment in anywhere I work. And then when we got to the next location, my husband was, he went overseas three times in 2 years.
When you say overseas, just quickly, can I ask how long are these trips? How long does he go for at any one time?
We're really lucky. He's only gone for 1 or 2, maybe 3 months at a time. Like it's not significant. I know people where their significant others are gone for 5 and even that time, we're talking 10 years ago, between like 5 and 9 months. So what I experience is like a snippet of what other people do.
And so I did take you off track there, sorry, but I want you to keep going. But I'm actually quite interested to know then, you'd been a mum for longer, you'd gone through these really tricky times. When you left that job and you felt like a veil had been lifted off you, was that next period of stay-at-home motherhood much more enjoyable? Did you start to find your rhythm and you started to find your joy and it became easier, or was it still quite challenging?
It did become easier. My son still didn't sleep. The first time he slept through the night was when we brought our daughter home from the hospital. I haven't slept for a really long time.
Wow.
But it did get easier in that I focused a lot on my food because I felt like if I can't control the amount of sleep I get, because that was my biggest thing, is I was so sleep deprived. You know, I'm driving in the middle of the city one day and I got somewhere and I couldn't remember how I got there. And I was like, oh, would I actually notice if I had a car accident? Like there's a reason why they say sleep deprivation is the best form of torture, because it is torture. And then I got off. But no, I did start to eat better. I started to be a lot kinder to myself. I started to really, and I hate the word unpack. I don't know why. I feel like it's a little bit of a buzzword and I feel like lots of people say it. And I don't really know. Sometimes I don't know whether it's genuine or not, but I did feel like I had to kind of really think about, okay, what kind of mother do I want to be? Do I want to be like my mum, where I never felt supported? Or do I want to make sure that I'm present and then make them supported just by being there? I kind of came up with some goals for parenting for myself because I didn't have, like, my dad's great, but he worked all the time, so he wasn't there. I was a parent to my mum, not the other way around most of the time. So I guess I kind of came up with some goals of what do I want my parenting to actually look like? Like when our kids are older, what do I want them to say about me?
Yeah.
And what do I want them to remember? So that's when I started to go, I would like to be present.
Yeah. So I need to find a way to feel good in motherhood so that I can be the mum that I want.
Yeah.
And then your daughter comes into the world. How nervous were you? Because your early days of motherhood had, I guess, had so much trauma involved. So how nervous were you for those early days of new motherhood again?
Not that nervous, actually. Our lives had changed. Like there's a 5-year gap in between my son and my daughter.
Yeah.
We had lost 2 babies between my son and my daughter. So I kind of felt like, you know, those 2 babies they're not born for a reason.
Yeah.
I felt like, okay, we're ready now. And I went about things like it wasn't such a shock this time. I went about things entirely a different way. I actually didn't have my daughter in a hospital. We went to a birthing center because I was incredibly low risk. I was able to do so through that system. I had a midwife that I used to see every week, that you used to go to the birthing center to see her, get checked out, have a conversation. I was very upfront with the fact that I'd experienced all these things before and I was worried about experiencing them again. And that's why I've gone about this in an entirely different way. We're also worried that my husband wasn't going to be there for the birth because that wasn't clear. So I had to have things organized to kind of make sure that I was looked after, my son was looked after, and that everything could go along.
Yeah.
But I did do things really differently.
Yeah. So you've done enough work to sort of help yourself get there, which is no small feat. So then your daughter enters the world. Was your husband able to be there?
He was. Yes. He actually took his long service leave to make sure that he was there.
And so what were the early days of your daughter's life like?
Actually, I didn't think too much about them. Honestly, because you have that other child. And by this time, our son was at school like a 5-day fortnight. So I had time alone, but I also had time where you've got that other child who needs you, who can speak, who can run around. Like sometimes you kind of have to feel like who needs me more. So a lot of it was I just put our daughter in the carrier and off I'd go. And so she almost just became an extension of me in those early days, I guess. And, you know, we'd move. Like 8 weeks after we had her, we moved again. So there wasn't really time to, like, we were focused on moving.
Yeah.
It was born a little bit, like we were packing up things in the house and we were, like, there was, you know, we were organizing things and she didn't have a room when she was born. So, like, we had a cot that we'd been given from someone else, but it was sitting in the garage. It wasn't getting put up until we'd moved to the next location. We had a bassinet beside the bed, which is, like, they don't need a room.
Yeah.
But all her clothes were underneath the bassinet and it was all set up in this corner and that's kind of all she had for the first 8 weeks. And then when we moved because of the distance, she actually slept in the bassinet of a pram for the next 2 to 3 weeks while we waited for the stuff. So probably by the time she was 3 months old, she didn't actually, like, she didn't exist anywhere but about here.
Yeah, yeah. And so those early days obviously felt quite different to your son. You then eventually return to work at a full-time capacity. I think she was about 15 months old. And you say that you felt quite guilty about that, because it was more work than you planned to.
Yeah, I didn't want to go back to work full time, but it was getting to a point where I'm like, well, I can't stay home anymore. I need to go to work. I need to do something for me. And the only thing available was full time. And, you know, even 8 years ago, she's 8 now. So there wasn't any room for flexibility in that. You just had to kind of take what you got. So there was a lot of guilt with that because I felt like I didn't have the time that I had with my son. Like, even though the time I had with him was not through my choice, it was through actions of others, I still had that time, but I didn't give the same time to her.
How did you navigate, especially the early days of working full time when your husband was often not there?
We survived.
Yes, survived, not thrived.
Sometimes you just go, right, I just need to survive this. Let's just worry about it later. Let's just get through and we'll just see where it lands. But what I did find with full-time work is that because I was doing the same hours as everyone else, unlike the last time, there was no expectation of me to kind of be at work when I wasn't at work. There was no expectation of extra work, or so I felt like once I came home, I was home. So I felt a lot more present and I made the effort, well, made the decision. I shouldn't say made the effort because that makes it sound like I'm a bit of a workaholic. I am in some respects, but I'm not in others. I made the decision to, as soon as I shut that door of a day, that's it. As soon as I'm in the front door, I'm a parent and I have to soak up all of this because these little people need me and I want someone to visit me in the nursing home.
That is a great point. I always think of that in the back of my mind too. So you've been on quite a journey now. You're well ahead or well more qualified as a parent than I am. What's this season of parenting alongside work looking like? Are you still full-time or are you part-time now?
I'm still full-time. We're looking at another move. Our location has changed twice in a matter of 3 weeks.
Wow. As in for the next move, you're not sure where it's going to be?
Nothing.
Wow. How does that uncertainty sit with you?
Oh, I guess I have to just disassociate myself with location. I have to go, that decision will be made for me. I'd love to just know where I'm going, because now with school-aged children, I need to put them into school, like to the pointy end of the year, and I need to know where they're going. But it's also, they have to be educated, like they have to go to school. So it's just where they go to school is a bit of an issue if I don't know where we're living. But at the end of the day, that the education system has to accommodate them. There's nothing they can do. There's nothing I can do about that. It just has to happen. So I guess I kind of switch my brain off a little bit to that. It's kind of the old adage of control the controllables and just let the rest go. Easier said than done, but like our life is not his job. Our life is the home that we create together. And it's not a place, it's a feeling within our unit.
Yeah. I guess that's what you've had to really focus on when you've moved so much. It's more about the idea of home being a family rather than a location.
Yeah.
How does resentment show up for you, and how has it over the years? Because I mean, I can be resentful just if my husband's gone for 7 hours a day. But you've navigated something quite different, months on end. And it's interesting even hearing you say you were lucky it would be 1 month or 3 months. And I'm here going, gee, that's a long time to solo parent. So how has it shown up for you over the years? And I guess the career choice your husband's made, how it's, and I don't mean this nastily, I don't know how to say it, but I guess how his career choice has impacted your family and your life.
Yeah, I guess it means different things at different times. Like we all talk about seasons of our lives, and it's definitely something that I think about now. And I look back and when we were really young and we were first together, like I had to get used to not having a choice about where we lived. Like that was a big thing to get used to. It's like I have no control over this. And that's a really strange concept to get used to. You are told where to go. Sometimes I'm resentful. I won't say I'm, because I am. I'm resentful in the really quiet moments of the evening. Like you've gone through bed, dinner, bed, bath. Everyone's, like I call it cactus hour, because everything just, you're being poked all the time. Like everything just goes wrong and everything goes to cactus. So definitely after all that and after the craziness that is sometimes, and that quiet moment where you sit back and you go, this, like other people don't have to do this months on end by themselves. Like other people have that support and have that, just that sense of certainty and belonging. That's not something I have. So sometimes I feel resentful over not feeling like I belong anywhere, because you buy your first house, that's your home. We bought our first house, renovated it, haven't finished renovating it, probably won't finish renovating it before the next move, but get it good enough for someone else to enjoy it.
Yeah.
You get a little bit resentful over, you don't get to experience like the normal things that when you're little and you're thinking about your future, because you think about your future in terms of what you know, it's very defined when you're little because you're very black and white. Think about, you know, you get married, you have a baby and you have a house. But so I do get resentful over not having that normalcy sometimes. That I just see like other people are just so settled. I don't ever feel settled. I feel comfortable, but I don't feel settled, because every 3 years we're not.
Wow. And how do you think your husband feels about that in terms of potential guilt and whatnot? Because I imagine a lot of his emotions he's learned along the way too. He didn't know what it would be like to leave his kids for months on end until he did it, for example. So how do you think that's shown up for him over the years?
I think there's a lot of guilt involved, especially if he rings and he can tell everything's gone to shit just by the sound of my voice. And
yeah, like, hi.
Yeah, it's, or, you know, he'll FaceTime or something like that. And one period during COVID, like, my daughter got a hold of the island and I just let her go because I'm like, oh, you know what? We only do this once. So go for your life. It'll wash off, whatever. And then he rang and he saw what was the, I just had all this drawing over my face. And he's just like, how was your day? And you can kind of hear the, oh God, what have I got her into when things like that happen? So I think there is a fair amount of guilt, but there's also, I'm very conscious of that. And I'm very conscious that, you know, he does a job that isn't a normal job. It has consequences. It has cost to him as a person and to us as a family. And I know, and some people have to pay the ultimate price. And I'm very aware that he does feel everything. Like, he's also grown up in, you know, a traditional family where the men, you know, provided and the mum stayed at home or, you know, worked very little. And that's not the life that Defence Life gives you. It doesn't give you the traditional roles. It's whoever's at home has to deal with whatever. Because sometimes, you know, if a bill's late or something, you have to pay that. You can't, you know, that's not for someone's, it's not someone's job. It's just, let's just deal with what we can deal with. So, yeah, I am very aware that we, as a couple in our relationship, we need to talk about things. I think there's this notion of sometimes not talking and that not healthy for anyone, especially with what he does.
Yeah. Do you think your children's relationship with it changes as they get older? Do they become more aware and more like, Dad, no, don't go, don't go? Or are they just used to the lifestyle?
As they've gotten older, they're actually more used to it. There was a time, so when my son was two and my husband was away, he was just crying for the day. And I was just like, whoop. And I couldn't really, I'm like, nothing's wrong with you. So it's like, you're not unhealthy, not sick, like you're not hungry, not all those things. But he was just crying and I just sat next to him and I said, do you know why you're crying? But do you know? And he ended up saying, you sent Daddy away.
Oh.
And I said, well, Daddy is away. He is. But I didn't send him away. That's what he does for a job, sometimes sends him away. And that's because sometimes other people need him.
Yeah.
And we still need him, but they need him in a way that we can't have him right now.
Did that break your heart?
A little bit. It was kind of opened my eyes to what it looks like. So I guess I've never really thought about what it looks like from a little person's eyes when you've got that limited understanding. Like when you're an adult, you kind of, you can hear, listen and have this broad understanding of what's going on. But when your world is literally your parents and one of them,
yeah,
then it makes sense to think that one sends him away.
Yeah. What about the moving element as they get older? How do they feel about moving to a new place?
My son has moved more than my daughter. My daughter's, because of the last time that my husband moved, but I didn't, like I stayed and he moved. So like she hasn't moved as much. So I haven't tested her. So this will be her first big move that she can actually remember.
Yeah.
So it'll be, yeah, interesting.
And when you say that your husband's moved, is he living somewhere different to you now?
No, he did come back. So during COVID, he went. We wouldn't have made that. We made that decision because we bought a house, because we wanted a piece of us somewhere while we moved. We wanted somewhere to come back to and a piece of us that belongs somewhere, yeah, I guess, or existed somewhere. So during COVID, well, before COVID, because if we knew that COVID was going to happen, we probably wouldn't have done it. We just made a choice that he would go and then I would stay.
And what have been your best tips or learnings through solo parenting seasons that you'd pass on to any type of solo parent out there. It might be someone that solo parents full time. It might be someone who's a defense family. What have you learned along the way?
I think the biggest lesson that I'm still learning is that you need to give yourself space. Like, you have to be everything to everyone, but you also have to have the space to say, I'm not those things. And that's really hard to say that. You just kind of muddle your way through, but then it's just acknowledging the fact that you can't do everything and that sometimes you do need help. And yeah, it's sometimes you don't have that help, but just acknowledging the fact that you need it help, like, that makes a difference.
And also that you can, what did you say in our email, that you can use pancake batter, I think, to make a cake, and that cereal is okay for dinner.
Yeah. There are, the pancake batter came out through Coke because we have pancake sundae every Sunday. And I just got so sick of making the pancakes because I couldn't put a load of washing on and make the pancakes. So I ended up just making the batter, baking it in the oven as it's coming out in a little.
So I think the lesson there is to stop the perfection or avoid the pursuit of perfection as a parent. Just do what you need to get by with what you have.
And be open to the experience that it's so, like, our idea of perfect is not our kids' idea of perfect.
That's so true.
To them, because we are literally their world. They don't know anything other than us, and that's perfect in itself.
And that's so beautiful. And that gets me to your cricket story that you wrote in the email. Can you please share a bit more about that?
My husband was away, as usual. And my son loves cricket. He plays in our local team. And this one game, he didn't get a chance to bat at all. And he just bought a brand new bat and then didn't get a chance to bat. So that is really upsetting because he just bought this bat, specially measured and all this stuff that I don't understand, but I'm learning. And I just went, you know what? Do you want to stay? And he went, yeah, I want to stay. And okay, well, I'll bowl the ball for you and you can bat. And my daughter, she kind of dabbles in all sports because her brother is her hero. So she was kind of dabbling in cricket as well. So I'd have a bowl, she'd have a bowl, and then we'd all swap bats. And we just, all the other families had gone and it was just the three of us. And we just watched the sun go down. And having that experience gives me joy because it wasn't like I would normally try and get home to get everyone dinner, bath and bed. And so I can have a breather, I guess, but just knowing that I gave him that space and we all kind of had a breather during that and we all walked away happy. It's when you have the space to do that and also make the decision to go, I don't care. We'll just be there and we'll just do.
Forget about the routine for the night.
Yeah. Yeah. And sometimes that's really good for your mental health as well.
That's such a beautiful story. And thinking of your mental health, my last question to you, if you could go back to the Emma that was seriously considering taking her life, what would you go back and tell her?
Everything has a time and your time to be a parent is now. And your idea of what this is meant to look like is not what it should be. You should be able to experience joy. And getting up to feed at night should be, it's quiet. There's millions of people around the world that are doing the same thing as you. And you should find peace in that.
That's beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing such a unique and vulnerable and open story.
Okay, my pleasure.
Thanks for listening to Ready or Not. If you liked the show, please tell your friends, subscribe, or write a review. You can also find us on Instagram at readyornot.pod. That's it for today. We'll see you next time.